Hello, and welcome to the Angelist India Radio. Through these conversations, we're taking you inside the minds of great investors, experienced founders, and talented experts. Angelist India pioneered new concepts in startup fundraising and investing for India. You can find out more about us on angel.co/India. Let's dive in.
Hello, everyone. This is Kashish Sharma, your host for today's episode of Angelist India Radio. And I'm stoked to have such a young visionary founder with us today, Anshul Sharma, co-founder of Red Wing Labs and also of Forbes 30 Under 30 alum.
Thank you so much, Kashish. Very happy to do this. Hope you're doing well and safe as well.
Yes, sir. So far, so good. We're hoping the same for the team as well. Anshul, just for our audience, we'd love to start off by you giving us quick introductions about yourself, about the team.
So quick introduction about myself is I'm one of the co-founders of Red Wing. At Red Wing, we're basically building autonomous logistical systems by using drones as the backbone in a hub and spoke layout. And the first market that we're targeting is healthcare. Our wedge into the market really is by building virtual cold chain that is delivering cold chain medical products like blood, vaccines, cardiac medicines, a bunch of other medical products on demand, while maintaining cold chain during the entire fleet. And all of this is happening through enabling drone delivery as a frontier tech.
Awesome. Makes absolute sense and definitely the need of the hour as well. But let's take a few steps back, Anshul, right? I mean, let's talk about the genesis of Red Wings. You and the team could be doing anything at this point of time, right? But what got you, to get into drones and logistics? It's a very specialized, verticalized focus for sure, right? So what's the background story for this?
Usually when I tell this story, it becomes a little bit longer, but I'll try to keep it a little bit shorter, this one. Basically, there are two things. One is that our team is one of the most awarded aerospace engineers in the country, with awards from NASA, Boeing, Lockheed Martin, Airbus, and others. And that primarily happened due to participating in a lot of competitions which were happening in both Asia-Pacific and US as well. So that was more on how we developed a forte into this area. On why we chose specifically into going using healthcare to make our first impact in, is more of a personal story as well, because my other co-founder, Arunabha, when we were basically winning these competitions and going through these challenges, he unfortunately got diagnosed with cancer. And he had to undergo through that chemotherapy cycle of about 8 to 9 months period. So there was one element of definitely a personal empathy towards what happens in healthcare on a daily basis, as we're currently witnessing the situation as well. And at the same time, when we dig a little bit more deeper on the aspect of using drones for healthcare, we found out that there are some fundamental challenges that just cannot be solved by using traditional logistics primarily. A very simple, intuitive one that everyone thinks on top of their head is basically, you combine drones and healthcare, and then you start thinking about emergency care. When someone meets with a road accident, or someone has a cardiac arrest, or someone has postpartum hemorrhaging, you have this form of autonomous robot which can leap over the existing infrastructure and deliver it in the fastest way possible for any mid to last mile geographical condition. So that's one part. And the second part is that now when you're combining or arranging these autonomous robots in a centralized manner, then that has a fundamental effect on how the supply chain happens. And then it starts trickling down to the individual products itself. A very simple example is that when you centralize blood, for example, you are able to have a lot more economics of in terms of component separation for whole blood products, meaning that when you donate blood, you donate whole blood, but typically what patients need is you need a platelets or a plasma or any sort of byproduct of this whole blood, and this whole blood needs to be fed into a component separation facility, which then feeds out these individual products itself. All of those nitty-gritties in the supply chain become much more viable when it's done to a centralized hub and spoke manner, which can cater to both emergency and routine care. So our focus is to cover the spectrum which exists between emergency care and routine care from a logistical standpoint, so that you don't need to, have a different solution for both of these criteria primarily. And just to touch upon virtual cold chain is this very simple concept. Is that it's like me telling you, if you need an ice cream at your house, You don't need to have a refrigerator because I'll be delivering that ice cream to you on demand while maintaining cold chain. And now you can import that same analogy into healthcare, is that since we're delivering, you know, these cold chain products, the end last mile hospitals don't need to depend or have in some cases as well the, you know, CapEx and OpEx, which is cold chain infrastructure, power generation backup, the OpEx of, you know, running 24/7 electricity grids and all of those challenges which are there. So that's the primary reason for that. I would just like to point out one more, you know, just from a higher layer perspective, that in healthcare, there is always this paradox of access versus wastage, meaning that when you're trying to solve for access, you stock up a lot of inventory at the last mile, but as a result of which wastage happens. And when you're trying to solve for wastage, you don't stock up as much amount of inventory at the last mile, and as a result of which access to medical product in terms of an emergency or a routine care suffers. So there are these fundamental mechanism, demand supply mechanism basically, which is where, you know, we believe our wedge into the market is solved for a drone delivery company to basically be in.
Right. And of course, your understanding, of course, of the problem statement is that on-demand is such a powerful yet untapped phenomena, right, within the sector, that drones as vehicle can definitely be leveraged and hopefully disrupt a lot of elements of this. And if I'm not wrong, the current state of infrastructure as well, let's say if we talk about India, etc., an on-demand setup would definitely make sense, right? And I'm slightly going off script here, but I mean, when you started off, especially let's say engaging with private hospitals, government facilities, stakeholders, what was the initial feedback that you got from stakeholders and any learning that you had where you thought, "Ki boss, we definitely need to get, you know, Red Wings built ASAP for, let's say, the problem that we're tackling"?
Yeah, I think so. Whenever we talked to the early stakeholders, primarily, it was a very mixed feedback. People really wanted it. We've talked to a bunch of private hospitals and a bunch of state governments in our initial days, primarily looking at the solution. There was a clear need, and everyone was looking from the lens of an emergency care. And then some people obviously looking from the care of routine care. But our first basically calling really came, or our first really test really came when we were called for in Papua New Guinea by the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation and Centers for Disease Control and Prevention for running the global immunization program of polio vaccines. And that was the first basically demonstration of how drones can be used in an immunization program. And over there, the challenge was primarily access driven in Papua New Guinea. In a country like India, since about 1.5 to 2 years, the pain points have become much more sharper now. In context, if we take any product, let's say, I'm again taking the example of blood because it's very easy to correlate with. India collects an annual of about 30 lakh units or 3 million units. And there's a wastage of about 1.3 to 1.4 million units annually. And it's a trend which is just constant practically. There'll be a little bit plus and minus of like 5 to 10%, but this is what the overall bird's eye view of blood as a product is. Similar is the case with, you know, other cold chain products as well. And obviously we're seeing a lot of this coming into the public eye through the vaccination program, which is going on. But there are these fundamental challenges on, you know, that when a demand basically pops up in a healthcare system, you always have, you know, lesser number of healthcare products that you actually need. And those products need to be delivered to this new location within a stipulated time period, you know. And when you're, you know, compounding the same problem throughout the country with a population the size of 1.3 billion, you're running multiple permutations and combinations of just, you know, these. You can imagine the map of India and all of these demands just popping up on the, like, a blimp on the map of India, essentially, every minute. And to solve for those challenges, you know, it makes more sense to centralize inventory, deliver it on demand by using autonomous robotic systems, cater to both routine and emergency spectrum. So make it an elastic solution, practically.
Absolutely makes sense. And for our audience, can you describe what these drones look like, or how much are they capable of? Like, if I can recall correctly, they have a radius of 50 kilometers, etc. Can you just, like, tell us a bit more about their specifications?
We're currently focusing on a range parameter of about 50 kilometers, operational range parameter of 50 kilometers. The technical range will be about 60 to 65 kilometers here because we always want to keep buffers in since you're catering to such a sensitive area. And we can carry up to 2 to 2.5 kgs by weight and 2 to 2.5 liters by volume. And the point here being that, you know, the specifications of the drones are something which will keep on increasing or decreasing based on the specific geographical condition that we operate in. To start up with, in India, we're looking at this configuration. And that's how we're working with the state of Telangana right now for the first, you know, layer of these experimental flights, which are scheduled to happen in about, I would say, 45 days.
You know, what are the challenges for a frontier tech company like yourself, right? The regulations that you have to deal with, raising venture capital, of course, that can't come easy, right? Or hiring the right talent.
Yeah, I think on the hiring part, there is definitely quite a bit of compatible engineers which have a background in autonomous robotics or aerospace, practically in a country like India. We're still learning to go on the hiring part. We're obviously actively hiring right now. I'll do a shameless plug at the end of this podcast, but that's on the hiring front. Yeah. So on the venture capital front, you know, it's a frontier tech area, it's primarily the part that inherent tendency to rely on an incumbent to validate this new sort of, you know, company or new sort of area is a very tricky challenge to work with in a space where, you know, the deep tech scene in India is still up and coming. But at the same time, you know, over the past, I would say, 1 to 2 year period, there's been significant movement happening in the deep tech front, at least at the seed series A level. And there are some good success stories, basically, which have started to come out now. And hopefully, you know, I think as things move on, there'll be more participation happening in deep tech. The other thing is also that it's a matter of a recalibration of expectations. For folks expecting a drone delivery to happen in a city like Bangalore or Bombay or Delhi, or delivering, you know, e-commerce logistics or you know, food parcels or other stuff, I think we have a little bit longer decision time. But our job is really to, you know, like the first wave of adoption is going to be in the rural and semi-urban regions practically. And there's a good reason behind it. The reason behind it is that drone delivery is just a function of air risk, practically, meaning that the more urban airspace population is there in a region, the more longer gestation period or more technical challenges are there to solve for. Whereas the regions which have lower urban airspace population or lower number of flights basically happening, you know, from that airport, it's much more easier to basically plug in these systems as the first wave of adoption. That's why the FAA, which is the U.S. federal agency, also has this motto of a crawl, walk, run, fly, practically. They're currently at running and they will be flying, you know, this year and next year, practically.
Interesting. No, that absolutely makes sense. I mean, I remember the first time coming across Red Wing and I too had just, you know, like the basic assumptions, right? And the basic apprehensions. That, oh, it's drones, you know, regulatory environment in India doesn't really favor this industry. Is this a venture backable business? You know, like all of those usual kind of tropes that you end up like overthinking about. But to me, it was a very fascinating journey because when I started speaking with you and the team, I actually realized that the way I thought, or I think the way most of the people imagine drone adoption, which is very retail first, very, you know, just, I don't know, like pizza delivery first kind of mindset, right? That clearly is gonna come with a lot of obstructions and with a lot of regulatory oversight, right? I mean, it's India, it's the infrastructure, so on and so forth. But I mean, and this is something, Anshul, that you really have to dive deep, right? You're not just developing these drones. You're actually conceptualizing these hub and spoke models, right? You're working with air traffic control systems. You're working with government and setting up proprietary infrastructure, right? I mean, shed some light here. I mean, this is a purely regulated environment that you and the team are creating in conjunction with government authorities, right?
So the point over here being that you view this as a robotics airline. That means there needs to be standardization and standard operating procedures, SOPs need to be set in place. Now, when you're trying to standardize, drone delivery adoption, it's that you need to create a sort of a miniaturized version of an airport with a pharmacy on it for our use case. And when you're trying to create a miniaturized airport, you obviously have to coordinate with the local ATC for each and every flight practically when you're doing. And obviously there are, multiple things which can go wrong if they're not done in the right way practically. But at the same time, the BVLOS experimental program by the Ministry of Civil Aviation and the central organizations have been going in a very phase-wise manner practically, in which the first wave, like I mentioned, the first BVLOS flights which are happening, beyond which the line of sight flights are, flights which are longer distances of, 5 kilometers, 10 kilometers, 20 kilometers, 50 kilometers in distance. Those flights are really happening in the sort of peri-urban regions or semi. There's an area called Vikarabad, which is about an hour and a half away from Hyderabad in Telangana, which is where the first, these vaccination program is supposed to be scheduled out for that part. And when you're trying to do it for the first time, obviously there are so many kinks to iron out on, right? How do you communicate with the ATC on a daily basis, regular basis? What is the communication protocol? You don't want to overburden them at the same time as well for, miniaturized things. There needs to be just a very basic level of communication happen. At the same time, there needs to be emergency procedures, because everyone in their mind basically keeps thinking about the worst case scenarios, and you obviously need to work from a safety perspective as well, that, what happens in the case of bird strike, can you still fly? What happens in the case of communications loss, can you still fly? What happens in the case of, heavy rains and, weather conditions, can you still fly? And all of those individual risk element is something that a company like us are basically, mitigating it step by step, basically on that front by building more redundancy. So it's a marriage of robotics, autonomous, and aviation happening together to create this robotics airline. I think drone delivery is a very, I would say, a loose term primarily, because everyone and their grandmothers can take a drone right now from their nearby store and deliver like 500 meters or 1 kilometer. But when you're trying to deliver these cold chain products or like medical products on demand day in, day out, 24/7, 365, frequency of like 10, 50, 100 deliveries per day, then you need these sort of standardization processes to be set in place, and that's our job right now to build them.
Fantastic. Talking about the current state of affairs, COVID-19 and the pandemic, right? Recently it was in the news that Telangana has okayed vaccine deliveries via drones. First for, I think, line of sight deliveries. And now I think they've also given BVLOS, applications and approval. How is Red Wings playing a part in it, or how do you plan to play a part in it?
So we're definitely, number one, we're definitely taking part in this entire program structure which has been laid out. Number two is that we're just guiding everyone onto how to do this from not just from a stakeholder level perspective, but also from a systems engineering level perspective. It's the point over here is that it's very tricky, primarily because one, there is a healthcare emergency situation, the biggest one that the country has ever seen and probably will ever see as well. And at the same time, you need to manage everyone's expectations to see how much pain points can be alleviated immediately, mid-term, and a long-term perspective. So it's a very program management view, that there are three phases: phase one, phase two, and phase three. Phase one is practically these experimental flights happening for different boundary conditions, meaning it will be for 5 kilometers, 10 kilometers, then 15 kilometers, and 20 kilometers. Onboarding of hospitals, how do you communicate with the hospitals? Onboarding the supply chain partners which will be involved, maintaining the integrity of those, medical products in air while it's happening, and just at the same time documenting it well, so that those boundary conditions can be expanded more. For example, the current approvals, the first one which has been gotten to the state of Telangana for this BVLOS Medicines from the Sky program is from sunrise to sunset. That means from about 6:30 a.m. to about 6:30 p.m. And if within those time period, how many number of deliveries will be happening. So it will be a very gradual, phased out manner, based on safety case scenarios and documenting every part, to slowly increase the boundary conditions, add on more corridors to it, and increase from there on. So I think that that's the overall perspective currently of the program. And obviously there are new things happening basically in the program on a daily basis as well, to include more inventory or to look at, you know, different hospital regions per se who want to basically, you know, take part in under this program per se. And the idea is to, you know, then after a period of 8-9 months, when it becomes, when everyone in the community and us and all other industry players also feel confident, then you can basically copy paste this model into other regions as well, whether it's private businesses, B2B hospital chains, or whether it's B2G government, you know, organizations as well. So that's how, you know, the entire structure out is currently being planned.
Nice. That's definitely remarkable for sure. Anshul, what's your utopian vision of healthcare logistics?
We're right now at a stage where we're trying to find these pockets, you know, where things are, where we can basically start operations, and then these pockets are expanding as time goes on. I think the overall viewpoint is that this is a technology which needs to be built because it's everywhere right now. Practically, if you go to a town in Ireland right now, you can, you know, order yourself an ice cream, you can order yourself a Samsung phone, and it will come to you by drones. Not many people know about it, but, you know, it's like when it first started happening 6 months back, it was all over Instagram Reels, and, you know, everyone was taking stories for each other, every delivery which was happening practically. So there's a huge impact which happens, and that's the case context of Ireland. When it happened in Africa, you know, it inspired a generation of robotics in young kids, because Africa was very early adopter in 2016 per se. And now, you know, I would say at least like 15 to 16 countries in Africa have, you know, full-scale drone logistics solutions with them. And similar to the case of US basically, in which there are certain regions like North Carolina, Florida, and other states which already have active programs going on, and now they're keep on expanding those programs with, you know, Walmart and other players basically coming in. So from the Indian context, it's that in India, I think number one, the delivery volume will need to be a little bit more higher per se, that as compared to how it's happening to the rest of the world. That's one part. Second is we'll be needing a little bit more agility in terms of making it more sense from the unit economics level perspective as well for this point. So the overall utopian vision, I would say, is that I still don't think that it makes sense for every geographical location or for every application. But from a healthcare perspective, we're trying to build a logistical system which can cater to both routine and emergency care. Then this is the only way that we see it possible to happen. And if we don't enable this technology, I really doubt that we'll ever be able to solve these two key issues or any other mechanism practically.
Wow, I truly hope you end up realizing this and definitely making this change for sure. Anshul, you got to debunk some assumptions for us, right, that people in general have about drones and the industry in general, right? I mean, what are those common myths that, you know, people usually come across and they keep on asking you, and you're like, boss, wait, let me clarify a few things for you.
I think one of the interesting things is that, you know, we're not a drones company. At the same time, you know, where drones is a very small element of maybe I would say 20-30% of what we overall do. We're mostly an autonomous logistical company. That means that drones is just the vehicle, and the rest of the backbone, which is both in hardware and software, needs to be built by us. So that's number one myth that is out there. The number two myth in general about drone delivery per se. In healthcare, solving for emergency care seems very intuitive. The two variables that pop into your head is time and access, that you have drone and you can solve for time and access. But what happens really is that time and access are getting solved by default when you're trying to do just from point A to point B, and you don't need to have a hub and spoke for that. But when you're trying to do in a hub and spoke, the structural changes in the entire supply chain, right from how it's procured at the level, at the source level, to the point that it's coming to the last mile, there are 6 to 7 layers involved in it. And all of those individual compounding costs is something in a very, something where the cost structure differs quite a bit for a traditional logistical company versus, let's say, a drone delivery company. Primarily because, you know, you are trying to change the supply chain mechanism, which is that you're doing on demand both for routine and emergency. That means, you know, currently how it's happens is that in the morning there is one run of medicines or restocking happens. And then in the evening, there's another run of restocking, which happens. And in the middle of the day, there are multiple emergency runs happening, which is the onus of the patient's relatives, basically, to take care of that. So this whole, you know, unorganization or lack of visibility that who is responsible when you need some medical product, right? Is something that we want to take the burden away from, and just delivering it on demand essentially is able to cater to, you know, both ends of the spectrum. So I think that's another bigger myth that I just wanted to clarify on.
Anshul, are you guys hiring for any positions, and how do people join your awesome mission?
Yeah, we love AngelList too much. So all of our listings are on AngelList. We're currently hiring for hardware positions. We'll be hiring for business roles as well over the next 3 to 6 months. If you just want to apply for these positions, you can type Red Wing Labs into AngelList India platform, and you can find us over there and submit your application.
Perfect, man. It was a delight to have you aboard. But thanks a ton for taking some time out and just, you know, shedding some light on the awesome stuff that you and the team are doing.
Thank you so much, Kashish. This was a pleasure.